Welcome to the Teen Life Podcast, where we research teen culture so you can focus on connection. My name is Caleb. We're here again with Tobin and Carly, and we have a lot in store for you. To start off, we're going to do Caleb's Corner, where I'm just going to rapid fire trends at you. Okay, it'll be like drinking out a fire hose, but that's okay. And then we're going to get right into the O-pill and birth control. And then finally, Tobin's going to kick to end us off with how to report abuse, how to notice it, all the things. So to start off with Caleb's Corner, just some rapid fire trends. One of the things that like has been on TikTok for a bit, but I think like to just every time I watch it, it seems so fun to do, like, right? Even just like with friends, things like that. It's called Rank This, where it's basically you would give like 5 to 10, you can even do 3, like of a category. I see it most like in like sports, right? So you're like, okay, like if it's for basketball, hey, you're making a team of 5. No, not only that, you're ranking 5, right? The best of the best, top 5, like NBA players. And then one person provides the 5, right? So it could be like Dirk. And you're like, whoa, okay. Dirk's up there, right? Dirk's a legend. We all know this. But like, do you place him at 1? Because like, what if this person shoots off someone like, I don't know, Jordan, Larry Bird, all these things, right? So you're like, okay, do I place them at 1? Do I place them at 2 to leave room for 1? And then, you know, you're filling up the rest. And then the last one is like Draymond Green. And you're like, I'm having to put Draymond Green at 1. What's the deal? Okay. So it's a lot of fun because you also might get stuck with, you know, with the ranking system that just falls off whenever you're expecting and trying to read the other person. So it's a lot of fun.
It stresses me out. It gives me so much anxiety. Like, for exactly what you just experienced, what you said is that what if I end up with somebody that doesn't like if I was creating these, I would absolutely always have a like a bad answer or a joke answer at 5 or at 5 or 4 or 5 just to really mess with people's brains. So yeah,
and then it's like then my ranking's so off, then you share it and be like, hey guys, this is Tobin's ranking of top NBA players. Embarrassed in front of everybody. Next one, rapid fire trends. The Avatar, live action Avatar show has come out. That's on Netflix. It also just got renewed for a second season. So it's going well. People seem to love it. It has divided. Okay. If you are an Avatar fan, it has divided the fan base. Like some people are like, it's just so hard to adapt a show like that into live action. Some people are like, kid actors are terrible. Others, it just is, it's divisive. It's a fun show.
This is like anime Avatar, not
Avatar the Last Airbender.
Yeah, sorry. Avatar the Last Airbender, yeah. Earth, air, fire, water.
Okay. Not our blue Avatar friends.
Not the blue Avatar friends. M. Night Shyamalan came out with the live action Avatar movie. A lot of years supposedly ago, terrible. It was horrible. Yeah. It was terrible. It's better than that, I've heard. Next, and this is a trend, okay? It's been around forever. Like, not forever, but last few years. Mullets.
I hate it.
You'll see a lot of, like, middle school, high school boys rocking mullets. I was growing my hair out. I'm rocking a buzz cut now, but I wanted to rock the mullet. Could you imagine with that long, luscious hair if I would rock the mullet? My wife wouldn't let me, so...
I feel like you could pull it off.
I think so.
Especially in Oklahoma, but yeah.
Yes. Yes, my youth group would probably grow. Yeah, like, this guy gets it.
The like shorter mullet that's almost like the faux hawk mullet, you know what I'm talking about? But like, isn't super long, doesn't bother me as much. But there's just a lot of really bad looking mullets, and I hate, why is this a thing still? I don't get it.
But it's also funny too, because like it's like you go to like whoever cut it and you're like mullet, and they're kind of like, I don't really know how to do that. So like a lot of them just kind of turn into like undercuts.
Yeah, that's
what I wanted to go like full buzz cut and then just like a string of like long hair at the back.
Gross. Yeah.
The perm mullets are the ones that like the perm faux hawk mullet, like the triad is what kills me, because that's what a lot of the middle schoolers are doing, is that they'll perm the top.
No.
They'll cut it like a faux hawk, and then they'll let the stuff, like, it's still a perm on the back. It's still curly, but, like, it's almost like a poodle haircut is what I don't want to encourage adult to teen bullying, but that's that's one of those things where it's like, I just call them a poodle until they realize that they look ridiculous. So, yeah.
So kind of like Patrick Mahomes' haircut, just longer in the back.
Exactly. Okay. Now, listen, all that to say, I was in the trend of the boy band frosted hair, you know, whenever I was growing up. So it's when I was in freshman, I straight up did that. So it's not like we made good choices too. I think I've shown Carly that picture before. It's wild. Like we did our church family directory pictures the day after I did it. And instead of like pulling it through the cap, like you're supposed to, I just painted it on my head like an idiot. And so we've all been there, teens. We've all had terrible ideas and terrible, especially with hair. So
with hair, yeah.
Just cut it.
Yeah, I mean, who am I to talk? My hair goes down to my shoulders. Next, Eras Tour is on Disney. Okay, if you're sitting there and you're like beating yourself up, I missed it. I missed my chance. Don't worry, it's on Disney Plus. Okay, so you could watch it. You can have Eras Night at your own home. Throw a party. Watch the Eras Tour on Disney.
She added some stuff too from the theaters. Ooh. So I think there are like four or five new songs.
Yeah, and some acoustic stuff too. Like she added some acoustic things as well. For sure.
We talk about Genius. Taylor a lot, but she not yeah, so smart of her. Yeah. Well done. Last one, Dune 2. Okay. Like it's kind of taken over like a lot of like especially like Twitter, things like that, of like a lot of memes. It's almost at this point, like, and again, I think like it also depends on like the network I'm in, but like in my world it's become almost like a cultural touch point of like you'll see people referencing stuff like that. And so like you see like Lassan al-Gaib, things like that, which like you're like what is that? It's like from a movie. It's from that movie. And so like there's a lot from that movie. It's done really well. It's been super successful. People have loved it. So you'll probably see a lot of that. It came out like weeks ago, but yeah, it's done really well. I watched it. It was really good.
I watched the first one for the first time this week during spring break. And so I think I'm going to go see the second one while it's still in theaters so I don't miss out on that. So
the second one was better than the first, in my opinion. First one was doing a lot of setup. But like, yeah, anyways, even in like our friend group, we'll make jokes because like we all went to see it together. So it was just a fun movie.
Okay, well, transitioning into a less fun topic, but one that is equally fascinating, I think. Which is that at the beginning of this month, it was announced that the first oral contraceptive pill will be available over the counter without a prescription soon. So when this releases, I mean, I suppose it could be out already, but as of our recording, it has not like officially been released, but it's called Opill and it's a daily progestin only pill. So there's no estrogen. Sometimes they call this a mini pill because it's not the combination pill that a lot of people take. I'll just say the drug itself is not new. What's new is the way you can get it. So the fact that, especially maybe for teenagers, you don't have to go through a doctor anymore. You don't have to go through a parent anymore. You can just roll up to a drugstore or CVS or something and grab this off the shelf. And it's only about like $20 for a month's supply. So it's not very expensive. A lot of times you can get birth control free through insurance. And so I suppose it is more expensive than maybe some other options, but it's cheap enough that it's probably not going to keep teenagers or people who are looking for an easy way to get birth control. It's not going to stop them.
I have a question as someone who obviously doesn't deal with this. Is the reason why it's not being prescribed is because it does not have estrogen? Is that the part that makes it have to be able to be over the counter?
I think so.
Okay.
So they have said, like the FDA basically has said that based on like the instructions on the box, this is safe enough to take on its own. And I do think it's the estrogen because I suppose, I don't know, like some people shouldn't be taking estrogen. And so that is going to not be over
the
counter.
And obviously I think that in my experience with, just as an adult, I know that some people have, I've heard conversations with my own wife and other stuff that like there are some pills that affect other people differently. And so if that's the one thing that's kind of keeping this one kind of just does one thing and it kind of keeps it accessible. Like, I mean, that's interesting for sure. So,
but there's still side effects and stuff for this one too. It's not like it's just like you're taking like Claritin every morning, right?
Right. So side effects could be irregular bleeding, headaches, bloating, cramping, dizziness, mood changes, nausea. So there are some side effects that can come along with it. It is 98% effective is what they say, but that's only if you take it correctly. It also takes like around 48 hours, some people say a week to work. And so if you have potentially younger people who are taking this and not knowing how to take it well and just think, if I take one, I'm good, that could be a problem. If they're not taking it well, so this is the type of pill that you have to take it at the same time every single day. You cannot miss a dose or it's not effective. And it's like within a, I can't remember if it's a 3-hour window that you have to take it every day. So it's not like a, I'll take it whenever and it's fine. And so that is, I think, the dangerous thing. If you have people who are taking this out of context, especially younger people who haven't been to a doctor, whose parents haven't had the conversation with them about like, here's how you take it well, it could be dangerous because it's not going to do what they think it's going to do.
Yeah. And I think one of the dangers I foresee with it is that if you do know somebody or you have a teen that does switch this, just the, one of the benefits of being prescribed it is that you are given the conversation with the doctor of, here's all the things you need to know. So I know pharmacists are really good at that too. So like maybe the pharmacists are doing those conversations whenever they sell the thing, but like that's another thing as a parent of a teen, or if you are listening and you're taking this even as an adult, like just remind yourself, like these are like, so really you have to kind of seek out the information on what to do with this to make sure you're doing it properly, because usually the doctors are the ones telling you that stuff. So
Yeah, I mean, I think like because it's so available, right, $20, it's, your teen could be going seeing this, but oh well, you know, like that, let's do that, right? Let's get on it. Things like that. And then you as a parent don't know. And then also like,
that's true. I didn't think about that.
Not having to have the conversation with them about like, hey, here's how it works. You might not even recognize the effects of it. And then the teenager could be taking it wrong, still be at risk of pregnancy, all of that. And plus not even be aware of the side effects or anything like that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's like even as a parent sitting down and being like, okay, right, let's make sure, right, that we go over proper education for this kind of stuff, regardless of if they're going to take it or not.
So, right. Carly, I have two questions since you did all the research on this. My first question is there an age limit to buy this? And like, does it also do this? Second question is, does it do the same things that regular birth control does, where it's like, it could be taken for acne and like regular menstrual cycles and stuff like that? Like,
so the age question is a good question, and I did not see an age limit on it, but it also hasn't come out yet. So it wouldn't surprise me if they make something, but I didn't see on it that you had to be over a certain age to buy this.
Or maybe like if you're a minor, you have to have a parent to get it for you, but you can take it as a minor.
Right. Yeah. I didn't see any of that. I'll look into that. And if there is an age limit, I'll put that in the show notes or we'll add that in. I will say, like you're saying, Tobin, some people, it is worth having a conversation because some people, especially girls, like teenagers, will take birth control for other reasons other than just preventing pregnancy if they're sexually active. Some will do it for acne. Some try to do it for weight loss. If you're having irregular cycles or stuff like that, or if you're wanting to skip periods, that's a reason that sometimes doctors will prescribe birth control. This pill will not help with all of that. It might help with some. I didn't like look into each individual thing, but for example, combination birth control is used for acne. It's the estrogen part that helps with that. So you could have teenagers taking this thinking, I'm going to lose weight by like, and I'm not even saying that that's like medically accurate on combination either. But I think with TikTok, if you have a teen that hears a friend or sees a video that says, hey, birth control will help with XYZ, and they're going to go, great, I'm going to go start taking this. And they don't actually understand what they're putting in their body. And it's different than when a doctor oversees it and prescribes it. Yeah. So if I think it's still worth having a conversation with a doctor if you're looking for something other than just what this does, which is prevent pregnancy.
So that's the thing is like, it's perfectly valid to have, like, I've known many people that have done this for like acne and regular cycles and stuff. So like, but that's just a good thing to know if you're listening, is that this sounds like, again, in the early stages, it's strictly a contraceptive. Like that's strictly what it is.
And I think it's just worth saying too, it's not preventing STDs.
Yeah.
And so make sure that you're having that conversation with teens. And that's where this all comes down to, is you really need to be having a conversation with your teenagers early. And if birth control has not been part of the conversation, you might want to add that in of like, hey, let's talk about this. If that's something you feel like you need to go on for any reason, because now that it's accessible, it's not just a, hey, we don't have to talk about that because that's not an issue anymore. Right. They can get it. And so you just might want to have a conversation. And like I said, they might not even be taking it for, like, if you see that your daughter is taking it, you don't need to be stressed that they're for sure having mm-hmm. sex. They could be thinking they're taking it for another reason. But it also, as I was doing research into this, this generation and like Gen Z are really big into looking into what they put in their body, which is sure. great. And so there are a ton of people who are not doing birth control anymore, who are doing natural family planning is what they call it. And so I do think it's worth looking into anytime you put something in your body, especially if you're a teenage girl whose hormones are rapidly changing, it's worth making sure that a doctor knows mm-hmm. and agrees with that. And you're looking for signs because they'll also tell you if XYZ happens, then you need to come talk to me. And if there's not context around that, I think your teenage girls could be having all kinds of issues and not realize that it's actually pointing back to birth control.
Yeah, for sure. All right. So we're going from that topic to something that's, this is a little heavy, but I think it's incredibly important. One of the things that happens in this time of year, whenever school's starting to get really stressed out and jobs are getting really stressed and we're about to hit into summer, I can't back this up with stats, but I'm almost certain that if I remember correctly, that this is a high time for abuse. I think the holidays are the only thing that's kind of a little bit more, but we're going to talk today about reporting abuse and how to do that. And then maybe some things on like just to keep an eye out for. So whether you're a teen listening or a parent or a school staff, whatever it may be, this is something that all of us can use. But just to start off the top, let's talk about what needs to be reported. So abuse is defined as mental, emotional, physical, or sexual injury or failure to prevent such injury. So neglect or blatant disregard for the child's welfare or failure to make a reasonable effort to prevent physical or sexual harm. So that includes leaving kids in a dangerous situation. Like, you know, in Texas, we hear about the hot cars all the time, like mm-hmm. leaving your kid in a hot mm-hmm. car, failing to seek medical care for the child, and failure to provide necessary food, clothing, or shelter. In the state of Texas, if you fail to report a suspected abuse, you can be held liable for a misdemeanor or a felony. I can go even further on that and say if you are a licensed practicing counselor, therapist, or a certified teacher, you can lose your certifications if you are not reporting abuse within 24 hours of suspected abuse. So that really goes for everybody, but especially if you are working with children like that, that can lose your licenses and certifications. So real quick, let's start with some signs of abuse, and then we'll talk about how you report that. So a couple of things are frequent injuries. So if you have a child that you know in your life or a teen in your life, and they are constantly showing up with bruises or injuries, frequent complaints about pain without obvious injury. So it could be something that's hidden underneath clothing or something like that. A lack of reaction to pain, which that one is more like they're so used to the pain of abuse, whether it's physically or mentally or emotionally, in that so that when they do have pain in front of you and they don't react, that means that they are living in a climate where they're used to that already. Extreme fear or anxiety of going home or seeing parents. That is one that I saw probably the most, ones I saw most whenever I was a school teacher, was when students are finding every excuse they can to stay in their safe place of school,
right?
Or whatever. Unreasonable clothing that might be hiding injuries. So like if it's 100 degrees outside and they're showing up in really baggy hoodies or sweatpants mm-hmm. and stuff, like that might be just something to keep an eye out on. Some more obvious ones are like malnourishment and a consistent concern or lack of personal hygiene. So like one sign of abuse is if a student or if a child or teen is not getting the proper hygiene or bathing or stuff that they're getting, that might be a sign that a parent is neglecting them as well. Mm-hmm. They're stealing or begging for food. That kind of goes into the malnourishment. Their child is unattended for long periods of time. So if they talk about how like they are at home for, you know, 8 hours by themselves and don't have anything. Now that one I'll say to try to be careful with, because a lot of parents work multiple jobs and or they have night shifts and stuff like that. And that's not to say that you shouldn't report it, but like there are sometimes circumstances where kids are left alone because of, you know, parents having to work multiple jobs and stuff like that. Inappropriate sexual comments or behaviors, especially for children who are below the age of doing that. So like if you're looking at like elementary age or maybe middle school, if they're talking or doing things that their age should not be doing, that's a right. that's a sign that they're being abused as well, or they're around abuse. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of the same vein as knowledge of sexual relations beyond what's expected. And then the last thing is severe depression, anxiety, or aggression. So those are all kinds of signs of abuse. I know that's a lot, but you'll have anything to add to that before I move on how we report?
Well, I have a question of like, if the kind of expectation is like reporting suspected abuse, like where's that line? Is that like, okay, I've kind of seen these signs in a student that's like, you know, that I'm around or under my care, things like that. And you just immediately call, or is that like going through steps of conversations with that teenager, with that child before you call? Like, what's the line there before you just kind of like, you know, call and it might be a false alarm? And, you know, I'm assuming the government will just be like, okay, right. Like, thank you for at least taking precautions.
Yeah. So as a teacher, I'll tell you, obviously it's a case by case basis.
Yeah.
But my rule of thumb, what I always tell people is I would rather be wrong and upset a parent for being wrong than be right and then wait to be right.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. Yeah. Because I mean, we'll talk about it in a second, but when you report, it's anonymous. And so like obviously in a school teacher situation, like if something is reported, they're gonna know that like there's one of like four people that did it. Mm-hmm. And I've seen the ugly side of that too, where a parent will come up and, you know, throw a fit about it. And, you know, and that's not to knock on the parents. It's just they might be upset about it, whether because it's true or because they didn't appreciate it. But again, it's anonymous. So it really is no, like, that's the thing that I want to encourage, is that it doesn't really affect you other than you just know that you did it. And so again, if you are unsure and you think that there's a chance that it's happening, the better sense is just to go ahead and report it, because that at the very least gets somebody's eyes on it.
Yeah.
And, you know, even if it's not a big deal yet, it kind of gets like, it could maybe prevent something from the future. Like if the parent or the abuser knows that somebody is watching them now, it could pull it back. It also gets a case started. And as most people probably know, these processes and these agencies sometimes are frustratingly slow. And so having a file or a case started is always better than like when it's too late and we just need to be rushing through situations. And so,
yeah,
I mean, that's a good question, but you just like, I always err on the side of I'd rather be wrong than let something happen.
Yeah.
And I'd agree with that. I do think, though, you go with your gut. If a student comes to school one day and doesn't have a lunch because the parent forgot, that doesn't mean you need to report abuse. I think look for patterns. But I definitely think, like you're saying, Tobin, I would err on the side of, like, even if they're like, no, everything's fine, but you're like, something just seems off. Even if the teenager says it's fine, I think I'm going to have someone look into this. That is better than you finding out later, oh man, if I had said something, I could have saved this child or this student a lot of harm.
Yeah. And like Carly, you said the perfect word there. Look for patterns. Like, like you said, if it's a one-off thing, it doesn't mean you shouldn't ignore it. It doesn't mean that you maybe shouldn't make a mental note about it. But I mean, like a good example of that is, you know, a lot of times it can be just simply, hey, I had to work a night shift last night, and so my kid came to school hungry or whatever it may be. So like that's where a pattern would be helpful in that situation. And so let's talk about what reporting does look like. In Texas, you can report online or by phone. I will tell you, because I've reported a lot of these in the past as a teacher, it is always actually easier and better to report by phone. But if you are just like, man, I do not want to talk to somebody on the phone, but it's like, I get it. But you can report online. We'll put in the show notes the numbers for Texas that if you can call. Obviously, if you're in a different state or area, like a simple Google search will find you what you need. When all else fails, call 911. I mean, for real. Like that's because like there are caseworkers at almost every police department, especially for metropolitan areas that deal with this kind of stuff, or they can tell you who you need to contact. And maybe 911 is not the right, maybe you call the police department number instead of 911. But unless if the kid is in a dire situation where like they need, you know, emergency help, then always call 911. But if you call a police department, a local police department, they should have numbers for that kind of stuff.
Yes.
Because it is a government agency, you know, in most cases. As of September 2023, you can't make an anonymous report to the Texas Department of Family and Protective Services. You must provide your first and last name and home or work phone number. You can anonymously report to local and late state law enforcement agencies, though. Now, when I said that you will remain anonymous, is that they will not just go to the parent and be like, well, you know, Tobin reported you. But you do have to have your name tied to it. So they're not going to leak that information unless it gets subpoenaed in court records and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. You will be asked that for the people who are involved, who is being abused and who you suspect is responsible, and others who can provide information. So like, for instance, if it's a student, you will say, hey, I think it's happening from this caregiver, and also my, you know, principal, the counselor knows about it as well and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. You will be asked what happened with detailed information, and you'll be asked about the safety concerns. Do you feel like they can go home safely? Do you feel like this is they need to have immediate intervention? The person who reports it in good faith is immune from civil or criminal liability, and the DFPS keeps the name of the person reporting confidential, like I said, unless it gets in and subpoenaed in an affidavit or anything like that.
Right. So basically meaning, though, if you report and then it wasn't true, it's not like that family can come back and sue you. Yes. If you did it in good faith if you're making stuff up just to get someone in trouble, that's a whole different situation.
Yeah. And the other thing to know too is typically in these situations, they want the first point of contact. So like if a student comes to you as a school staff person and then you go to a principal or an admin about it, they want you, the person who was the first point of contact, to make the report, not the person who's getting secondhand information. Mm-hmm. And so just keep that in mind as well. If you're an adult listening, like, and you take it to somewhere else, like, you are still the person that needs to make the contact. And you can do it with that person, but they will typically want the first point of contact when reporting.
So, Tobin, you might not know the answer to this, because I tried to find this answer and I don't feel like it was straightforward. Can you find out afterwards about a case?
No.
It's just kind of you report.
It's confidential information. Okay. Unless they come back to you and say, like, we need more information, or it goes to court or something like that, it's typically confidential. So, like, I know that that's kind of sticky, because if they do report and they find out that, oh, hey, it's actually not anything, but then you keep seeing the trends. I think that there are times that, like, CPS will say, hey, actually, you've already investigated this, we're okay. But really, like, you can't, like, that's all confidential information that you can't get. So,
good to know.
So, yeah, that's a lot. And I think the main thing about all of this is just remind ourselves that we are all, you know, if we are in the right, we are all trying to do what's best for kids, and that sometimes it's some gray, nasty areas. And so just keep that in mind. Do you have anything else to add about that?
I just think it's worth knowing, like you're saying, Tobin, we want to do what's in the best interest of the student. And sometimes that means as an adult having to do things that aren't very fun. But if you're in the position where a student trusts you, it's okay. And as we've said, you'll remain confidential. And like, if we trust the system to do what it does, then you're not going to get families who are innocent in trouble. You're just letting them know, hey, I'm looking out for this student. And so I feel like this is especially, as Tobin was saying, if you're a teacher or if you are around groups of students often, this is something that it's helpful to know what to do in case you're in this situation, so you're not scrambling in the situation. As always, if you need to call Teen Life or reach out to us to be like, hey, I've never done this before, we'd be happy to help walk you through it, especially maybe if you're in another state. I don't know all of those things, but I can help you Google it. You're not alone. And we want students to know that they're not alone too. And that's a wrap on this episode for this week. So if you enjoy the Teen Life podcast, we hope that you'll share it with friends, subscribe on YouTube or wherever you listen to podcasts. And always remember that teenagers are not a problem to be solved.